I'm Clay Pigeon. Welcome to the Wake and Bake Morning Show podcast. It's a weekly digest of some of the segments and moments that make up the Wake and Bake Morning Show on WFMU. Of course, you can listen live to Wake and Bake Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern on WFMU.org. Join me live every morning for the full show. It includes great music, chair throwing, pixie dust, and all-around good vibes.
Oh my God, the man is a maniac.
You can also hear the full show on streaming archives at WFMU.org/playlists/WA. Our animal of the week is the sparrow. Is it a bird's an animal, right?
Yes.
Our animal of the is the sparrow. They started off in the Middle East. Now they're the most widely distributed bird in the world. You know sparrows. You see them every day. You adore them, don't you?
Yeah.
Occasionally you'll toss them a little French fry stub. Sparrows came to the United States around 1851. They brought them to Brooklyn to help the trees that were being devoured by cankerworms and linden moths. But then their tastes changed. They wanted out of Brooklyn. They fanned out into the country, and they learned to eat grain.
Aww.
Well, they didn't lose their taste for bugs. An adult sparrow can eat 40 grubs in an hour, or 3,000 of those wriggling, writhing, pus-secreting grubs a week. They'll eat dandelions, butterflies, nozzles off spray paint cans. Here's the bad news about sparrows. They eat the eggs, they kill the young of pretty songbirds. Monog sparrows are generally monogamous, though they do something called extra pair copulations.
Aww.
For more efficient propagation of the species only.
How old was the oldest sparrow?
Come on, take a guess.
Whoa.
19 years. 9 months, just a scraggly little fighter. They are survivors, though. For all our berating of sparrows, whether those soft or pretty birds fly south and gorge on larvae and admire themselves in ponds and store windows, sparrows are gutting it out up north with us. Man, they're tough little bastards. There's a couple quotes I like about sparrows. Eva Perón said, "I am only a sparrow amongst a great flock of sparrows." So in that sense, aren't they a lot like us little sparrows?
Yeah.
I like this quote too, accredited to Eric Byrne, who said, "The moment a little boy is concerned with which is a jay and which is a sparrow, he can no longer see the birds nor hear them sing."
Wake and Bake loves sparrows.
Something about that poem makes me almost misty.
Hi listeners, it's Meredith. I'm here at Coney Island and it's a beautiful sunny Saturday afternoon. There's a sea of people here for the Mermaid Parade, so we're gonna dive in.
This is probably about maybe my 10th mermaid. I started back in the 80s going to the mermaid parade, but I don't go every year.
And when you don't come on the years that you skip, what is it about the parade that you miss?
Basically, it's the ground zero social event of the year.
Today I am rocking the Metrofish outfit. It's over 600 Metro cards cut up and glued to a skeletal structure. This is my seventh mermaid parade.
And do you always come up with something new every year?
This is the second variation of a MetroCard fish. The MetroCard has always inspired me because the subway stations, there's always like a mosaic tile which kind of attracted me. And you know, everybody in New York either has one or two MetroCards. So that there's some like connection to everybody in New York.
Who are you?
We are the Rogues of the Sea from Boston, from Jamaica Plain.
What brought you all the way out here? We love the Mermaid Parade. We love everyone's expression of their selves that we don't always get to see.
Can you describe what you're wearing today?
80s Valley Girl Caribbean mermaid magic.
What is it about mermaidness that attracts you to being a mermaid?
The freedom, the autonomy, the beauty.
I feel very at home at the sea. I'm with my kin, like all shapes and sizes, all beautiful colors, everyone expressing who they are. It's just a beautiful, watery, wet, delicious experience.
Inside the big tent, the El Chupacabra. Hey, it's here from Puerto Rico. You're going to see the Elephant Man and the two-headed boy, Billy Bryson, as well. Two heads. Holy moly. Hey, you're going to see the two-headed girl. You're going to see the ape girl. You're going to see the lizard woman. You're going to see them all inside the big tent. You don't want to miss this one, folks. It's an awesome, a stupendous show. Right here in Coney Island. Don't you miss it. Over 60 attractions in the Big Ten. Let's go. Let's go. Come one. Come all. Don't you miss it. Right here in Coney Island.
Come on, quit diddling around and turn that spotlight on one very special town in our listening area. Our Civic Showcase Community of the Week is Glen Rock, New Jersey. Glen Rock, about, I don't know, about 16 miles south of Jersey City. Population 11,601, and it's growing. Glen Rock was formed way back in 1894 from portions of Ridgewood and Saddle River. Glen Rock settled around a large boulder in a small valley or glen. There's your name, Glen Rock. Now this boulder, called a glacial erratic, weighs 570 tons. They think it was carried there by a glacier that picked it up maybe 15,000 years ago near Peekskill, New York. Then the glacier carried the big rock 20 miles to its present location.
Long ago I learned how to sleep. In an old apple orchard where the wind swept by, counting its money and throwing it away.
The Lenape Native Americans called the big boulder Pamachapuka, meaning stone from heaven. Or stone from the sky. There was a terrible trolley accident in 1911. The trolley operator was killed, 12 others injured. That was the end of the trolley system in Glen Rock.
Clang, clang, clang went the trolley. Ding, ding, ding went the bell.
Today in Glen Rock, for every 100 females, 18 and older, there are just 90.1 males. Glen Rock needs men.
Give me some men who are stout-hearted men who will fight for the right they adore.
Remember that movie, World Trade Center, with Nick Cage, directed by Oliver Stone?
Yeah.
Glen Rock was prominently featured. They lost 11 residents on September 11th, 2001.
The crash of these two aircraft into the towers of the World Trade Center in New York appear to be an act of terrorism.
A couple of famous people from Glen Rock include Valerie Harper, best known for playing television's Rhoda.
My name is Rhoda Morgenstern. I was born in the Bronx, New York, in December 1941. I've always felt responsible for World War II.
Titus Andronicus, the indie rock band, is from Glen Rock.
Aww.
As is and Ludovicus M.M. Van Iersel, recipient of the Medal of Honor for his actions in France during World War I.
An das deutsche Volk.
We hope you're listening, Glen Rock. We'd be proud to be your radio station. Thoughts and opinions on the topics that matter most to us. It's Quick Takes with Fabio. Bob, what's on your mind this week?
Been thinking a lot about car design and sneaker design. You've all seen and probably have worn contemporary sneakers, right?
Yeah.
The number of sneaker designs out there are probably in the multiple thousands at this point, starting somewhere in the late 80s, I guess, with, you know, the rise of superstar Nike and Adidas and all the rest. Sneaker design today is just this horrible, I don't know what happened and where it went wrong along the way, but everything looks like some kind of grotesque, bulbous, marshmallow thing on your feet. I saw a pair of sneakers that were the color of caramel.
Aww.
And they were really like puffy and big, like oversized almost. They looked like clown shoes. They reminded me of like drawings I'd seen in high school of the human anatomy, and they reminded me of the large intestine. Particularly the color rendition of the large intestine that was fully engorged with, you know, fecal matter.
Oh my God.
But fecal matter that was streaked with colors and weird shapes and twists and turns. And that's where sneaker design is today. They look horrible, and yet they're extremely popular. And why is that?
I don't know.
And then you look at car design, and it's kind of like almost mirrors that. You see these odd sort of semi-organic looking shapes and forms all around the cars. And for the life of me, I don't know what's happened to designers, but there was a time when automobile design was just fantastic.
Fantastic.
So next time you're walking around on the street, look at a bunch of contemporary new cars. And then look at some of the high-top sneakers that are out there. The typical, like, ostentatious ones. Lime green with orange trimmings, or gold, or all kinds of wacky colors with bizarre fluorescent trimmings. And, yeah, you get the idea. I know people like and collect sneakers nowadays, but it's a far cry from the elegant simplicity of, I don't know, a classic Converse All-Stars high top.
All-Stars, strike back.
Or, you know, the elegance of, say, I don't know, a Chevy Impala from 66. You pick the car, you pick the sneaker. You tell me that I'm wrong.
You know, sometimes words have a way of changing over the centuries. For example, let's look at the word fulsome. It's a word that first showed up in Britain in the 13th century, and it simply meant full or sated, with the suffix some, meaning to a great degree. We still use that suffix in words like lonesome or fearsome. So it kind of just meant extra full.
Finally, monsieur,
a wafer thin mint.
Bah, bum fool.
It's only a wafer thin.
I couldn't eat another thing. I'm absolutely stuffed.
In the 14th century, it came to mean plump or well-fed, but later that same century, it started referring to the feeling of having overeaten.
The meal is not over when I'm full. The meal is over when I hate myself. That's when I stop.
Fulsome. From there, it started to mean causing disgust or having bad manners. But by the 16th century, for some reason, people were using it to describe someone excessive in their flattery.
Your Majesty is like a big jam donut with cream on the top.
Like a donut, your arrival gives us pleasure, and your departure only makes us hungrier for more.
The word fell out of favor for a few hundred years, but by the mid-20th century, it was being used to mean abundance. As in heaping fulsome praise.
I see you're drinking 1%. Is that because you think you're fat? Because you're not. You could be drinking whole if you wanted to.
Hello, I'm Johnny Cash.
Now what, you might ask, does all this have to do with Johnny Cash? Well, not a thing. Folsom Prison in Folsom, California, was named for landowner Joseph Libby Folsom, who in the mid-19th century pushed for a train to connect Granite City and Sacramento, thereby bringing trade and economic opportunities to the area.
I hear the train a-coming, it's rolling around a bend, and I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on.
So when Johnny Cash sings Folsom Prison Blues, he's not saying that the prison is full or disgusting. But when he sings, well, I bet there's rich folks eating in some fancy dining car, probably drinking coffee and smoking big cigars, he might be feeling a little fulsome at how fulsome the passengers on Joseph Libby Folsom's train really are. Until next week, back to you, Clay.
Now here's station manager Ken with your Hump Day Hazmat Report.
Thank you, Clay Pigeon, Westwood, Massachusetts. A pepper spray accident at Frugal Fanny's sends 13 people to the hospital. Jacksonville Beach, Florida. Sergeant Tommy Crumley confirms that police found another outdoor camp teeming with hazardous materials used to manufacture drugs. Edmonds, Washington. Family escapes injury as runaway tractor trailer crashes into their Olympic Avenue home. Desert Hot Springs, California. Another honey oil lab explosion at Desert Hot Springs home. Neighbors half a block away reported feeling the explosion, thinking it was an earthquake. Queens, New York. Flip truck injures four on LIE. Thousand Oaks, California. Chemical burn leads to drug lab bust. Authorities discovered chemicals and equipment used to manufacture the synthetic opioid fentanyl and other drugs. Phoenix, Arizona. Cops exposed to unknown substance from suspicious package.
And there you go. That's round one. Frugal Fannies and honey oil explosions, chemical burns. What do you think, audience? Should we have a bonus hazmat episode today? They say yes, station manager Ken.
Mount Everest, Nepal.
Oh, geez.
Decades of commercial mountaineering have turned Mount Everest into the world's highest rubbish dump as an increasing number of big spending climbers make a mess. Littering the well-trodden route to the summit of 29,000-foot peak are fluorescent tents, discarded climbing equipment, empty gas canisters, colostomy bags, spittoons, desecrated furry costumes, cadavers, even human excrement.
Absolutely filthy on Mount Everest. Thanks for that heads up, station manager. We won't be going there anytime soon.
This is your favorite cheesemonger, Wendy Del Formaggio, with your weekly cheese report. I've been asked if there are any cheeses a person should always avoid. That's a good one, because so much depends on what you like, taste is subjective. The end. Just kidding. You knew I would have a real answer.
In such an unfamiliar place, you lose track of what is real.
I like to steer people away from gimmicky cheeses. You don't need cheese with fruit inside it, or cheese blended with chocolate. Chances are, a cheese with a bunch of junk in it is covering up the fact that it's a crappy cheese.
Yeah.
Also, don't be fooled by white Stilton, especially with dried mangoes in it. What the hell is that? It's the Frankenstein monster of fromage, that's what it is.
Frankenstein.
If you like fruit, nuts, meats, and other stuff with cheese, have it with cheese, not in cheese. You'll have a better experience that way. Back to you, Clay.
So I'm talking to Garrick at Bobby's Auto Shop here in Jersey City, New Jersey. How you doing today, Garrick?
Pretty good, pretty good.
Garrick, today it's going to be hot, up in the 90s in Jersey City, and now we're going to start getting into the hot weather as we get towards summertime. What can folks do to get their car in shape for summertime so they don't have problems?
For starters, it's good to check your fluid levels to make sure that everything is up to spec, your drive belts, that your AC is working properly, that way you can go on your road trips. Ideally, the best scenario would be is to check your front end and rear end suspension.
Right, and is all this, you can do all this fairly inexpensively?
Yes, correct.
And avoid a lot of problems later on. We see a lot of people in the summertime with the steam coming out from under the hood of their car. They're overheating. Now, what do they do about that? Is that a hose thing?
It actually could be because you're low on fluid levels. You could be leaking from a hose, from a radiator, or a water pump. There's a few components. But if you check your levels and make sure your levels are good, it is a good sign that you have no leakage. But if they're low, there's something you want to get looked at. That way you're not steaming at the side of the road.
You know, when I was young, I practically destroyed a car for the simplest reason, and I bet you'll tell me folks do this all the time. They don't keep oil in the car, do they?
Yeah, it's important to check your oil levels.
Now, how often do we need to do it? They used to say every 3,000 miles. Is it not quite as often today that we need to do that?
If you have regular oil, it's every 3,000 miles that you want to check your oil level. And if you're using synthetic oil, 5,000 miles is actually the time period, so extend it a little bit more. Even though it's a lot longer, you still want to check your oil levels every so often to make sure you have no leakage.
Ow! Well, I appreciate your time today, Garrick. This is Garrick from Bobby's Auto Shop. These guys are at 448 Grand in Jersey City. Thanks for all the great advice today.
No problem. You guys have a wonderful day.
It's the science of lightning. Lightning, or electrostatic atmospheric discharges, can occur 50 times a second on planet Earth.
Aww.
Whenever cloud regions build up electrical charges that are separated from an oppositely charged region,
this is complicated.
There's a potential for a lightning flash. And when that opposing charge is on Earth's surface, the conditions are right for a lightning strike or discharge in the form of a plasma channel.
Plasma easily conducts electricity.
And as the electricity travels along the channel, the high temperature causes air to expand explosively, producing a shockwave that we hear as thunder. And you might be wondering if it's true that counting after you see lightning can tell you just how far away a storm is.
One, two, three.
Well, According to University of Colorado climatologist Becky Bollinger, you can. Since light and sound waves travel at such widely varying speeds, the lag time between seeing a lightning flash and hearing thunder can indicate a storm's distance. And after some basic math, the speed of sound can be rounded to about 1 mile in 5 seconds. But if you think you're safe if that storm is 20 miles away, you're mistaken. Since lightning can strike up to 25 miles from a storm, if you see lightning, you're in risk of being hit by lightning. So the next time you experience lightning, you can count and divide by 5. But it's really a good idea to get yourself inside. Stay tuned to Wake and Bake for more science.
Good morning, listeners. Caroline Gollum here, senior contributor for ScreenSlate with your Movie Minute. Today's forecast is sunny with a chance of murder. They say you can't predict the weather, but I predict you'll love Titian-haired beauty Nicole Kidman in Gus Van Sant's pitch black 1995 mockumentary To Die For. Kidman sparkles as perky meteorologist Suzanne Stone, who will stop at nothing to achieve total television domination. Behind her glassy blue eyes is a gaping void of celebrity worship and absolute moral turpitude. Like a polyester praying mantis, our glamorous anti-heroine's style of lovemaking is decidedly dangerous, and any man that stands between her and TV stardom is sure to meet a grisly, if lusty, fate. Director Van Sant, known for gritty indies like My Own Private Idaho and Last Days, broke into the arthouse mainstream with this acid parody of American celebrity worship and brought future A-lister Kidman out of the outback and into multiplexes everywhere.
Columbia Pictures welcomes you to the real America.
Suzanne, did you get those kids to kill your husband?
Where criminals get to be celebrities.
It was on First Edition and American Justice.
And celebrities get away with murder.
It's nice to live in a country where life, liberty, and all the rest of it still stand for something.
With a screenplay by all-American cynic Buck Henry, To Die For keeps the laughs coming like a Kansas hailstorm. Catch it on Wednesday, June 27th at 10 p.m. when it screens at the Metrograph as part of the theater's Can't Miss Gus Van Sant retrospective. For WFMU and ScreenSlate, this has been Caroline Gollum, back next week with more cinematic goings-on. Until then, see you at the movies.
This is Wake and Bake. And this is Today in History, 5 minutes in front of 9. It's almost 80 degrees out there. We're going up to 90 before this thing's history today. Tomorrow we cool off to 81. Rain Saturday. We're back up to 87 by Sunday. It'll be summer by then. Tuesday, June 19th, 1586, English colonists leave Roanoke Island after failing to establish England's first permanent settlement in North America. England swings like a pendulum do. 1846, the first officially recorded organized baseball game is played in Hoboken at New Jersey's Elysian Fields. 1978, Garfield, holder of the Guinness World Record for the world's most widely syndicated comic strip, makes its debut. And in 1953, in the Cold War, Julius and Ethel Rosenberg are executed at Sing Sing in New York.
One of the greatest peacetime spy dramas in the nation's history reaches its climax as Julius Rosenberg and Morton Sobel, convicted of revealing atomic secrets to the Russians, enter the federal building in New York to hear their doom. Another of the spy ring, Mrs. Ethel Rosenberg, who with her husband was convicted of actually transmitting the secrets to Russia through Soviet diplomatic channels.
Happy birthday. Grab a harmony. Come on. Happy birthday to you.
Odelay, Odelay, Odelay.
Hey, knock, knock. Who's there? Old lady who? I didn't know you could yodel. Here's today's birthday. It's your birthday today, if so, you're in good company. And happy birthday from us here at FMU. 1930, Gina Rowlands born. Nick Drake. Wow, it's Nick Drake's birthday. We lost him in 74. Geez, he was so young. Felicia Rashad's birthday today. Kathleen Turner of, what was her movies? War of the Roses. Peggy Sue got married. Paula Abdul, straight up, her birthday today. Zoe Saldana, the fine young actress. Macklemore, the rapper. And Paul Dano, American actor. Jeez, he's a fine young actor. Here's a clip from There Will Be Blood.
So say it now. I am a sinner.
I'm a sinner.
Say it louder. I am a sinner.
I'm a sinner.
Louder, Daniel. I am a sinner.
I am a sinner.
I am sorry, Lord.
I am sorry, Lord.
I want the blood.
I want the blood.
You have abandoned your child.
Abandoned my child.
Say it louder. Say it louder.
I've abandoned my child. I've abandoned my child. I've abandoned my boy.
Beg for the blood.
You've been listening to the Wake and Bake Morning Show podcast. Did you enjoy it?
Yes.
Good. It's a weekly digest of the special features and moments which make up the Wake and Bake Morning Show.
Woo!
After all, you wouldn't want to miss special moments like this. Ah, you're in a good mood today, aren't you?
Oh!
The Wake and Bake Morning Show. Set your alarm and join us each Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 a.m. on WFMU.org. A little too early for you? Catch the archive show, which you can find easily on WFMU's homepage each day. I'm Clay Pigeon. They call me the Pigeon. Join me each morning for the full show, either on the radio or online at WFMU.org. And keep glistening.